Welcome to the Bread and Cup podcast hosted by Corey and Shauna Burris. They are a former pastor, a college teacher, and Pacific Northwest coffee lovers. Mostly, they are Jesus followers who find themselves in lots of interesting conversations with non-Christians, former Christians, wondering Christians, and young adults from all kinds of backgrounds. And we want to invite you into those conversations. The Bread and Cup podcast is a place for real talk about the Bible, life, and what it takes to move beyond the easy answers. So let's grab a cup and join the conversation.
Welcome to Bread and Cup. My name is Corey.
And I'm Shauna. And today we are eating hot milk buns. This is another, this was recommended by a friend, and we've paired it with a Costa Rican blend. It's a fun new coffee. We don't drink it that often.
And in a totally unrelated thing, God is God angry is our subject.
He's certainly not angry about Costa Rican blends.
That's right. But it's a question that we get a lot of, and I think a lot of people look at their faith and they wonder, like, well, is God angry at us? And when you look through the Bible, there's lots of things that make you think God might actually be angry, but is that true?
Yeah. The idea that God is just waiting up in the clouds with his lightning bolt, watching like a hawk for you to screw up.
A good smiting, as I like to call
it. A good smiting. Yes. A bit like a belligerent parent who keeps the belt not up in their room, but hanging on the wall so that when you get out of line, they can pull that down and give you the right whooping you deserve.
Which hopefully most people listening to this have not had that experience. So it's okay.
Because in Washington, that's considered abusive and that's not safe.
But it is true. A lot of people that are in church have had an experience of God being an angry, like you said, lightning bolt throwing person. And they fear that. Or they're on the other end where they love that. They love that the people that deserve it, I put that in quotes, right, get God's wrath and vengeance on them.
Yeah. And they view that as a matter of justice, which is going to be a podcast. Right. We're going to talk about the concept of biblical justice in a bit, but they do view that actually as justice. Like,
right,
these are sinners. They are doing their thieves and liars and drunkards and all sorts of other things that maybe we'll leave off of the list for the moment. But they sort of hold those things up and say, evil sinners, God is going to strike you down with his mighty hand.
And then when bad things happen around them, they atone that to God's anger and vengeance and his wrath upon people.
They ascribe it to that.
I'm sorry. Yeah. They give it to it. So like right now we're home.
We
because
are.
Of COVID-19, which a lot of people, at least at the time when we're recording this, are experiencing as well. And there are people out there that are going, well, this is God's vengeance on the world and all that hits his anger coming forth in this other way.
Certainly. Thankfully, I haven't heard that as much in this time. But I remember, because of the age we are, in the 80s with the AIDS epidemic, how loudly... there were church leaders just screaming how that was basically that people deserved it. They deserved to be sick. They deserved to be dying because that was God's wrath on them for their sin.
Right.
And of course, we will know and we acknowledge now that it is in fact a virus. It is an illness like any other illness. And while it was concentrated in certain communities in early days, that had more to do with some of the social factors around it than it did a specific susceptibility. And so thankfully, that is not touted anymore.
But
we're not that far removed from the idea.
No, but and I think it is more indicative of where people are in terms of how they view God and his character. And I think that's really what we want to talk about is like, what is God's character and why the idea of an angry lightning bolt throwing God is not in line with the Bible. And I want to start by saying, like, I think we talked about this in one of our past episodes about people's view of deities, right? In throughout history, people have viewed deities as a non-relational beings. They would come down, they would muck things up a little bit for the rest of us, or they would, you know, like we're talking about, throw lightning bolts. And so a lot of
Norse mythology, Greek mythology, Certainly the early views of God that were in tandem, those early Mesopotamian gods that were in tandem with when we see the stories of Genesis coming out. Absolutely, that was the view.
They Egyptian
theology. Of course.
You know, and all of these are, and I think
the God's in charge and the people are just there to serve their well-being.
And I think a lot of people find solace in that because then you can fix the problem that you're facing as opposed to facing the problem that you're facing, right? And we love a vengeful God because, well, this is just his wrath, but I'll do things differently. Or on you, or even if I'm having wrath on me, well, I'll do things differently,
right?
And then God will be able to, he won't do this again to us. Yeah, it's the way we view it.
It's a tit for tat economy, right? That there is not, it's not a familial relationship. Right. Where it's I serve your best interest and you serve my best interest, which is community and relationship driven. It's about punitive punishments. So these are the rules, and the rules are the rules. And if you step out of bounds, then whoosh,
He's the angry nun that whacks people on the hands with a stick. You know,
Do you remember my mom's story? She went to a Catholic school as a all of her elementary years, and the nuns would wrap her hands with rulers if she got an answer wrong.
Well, I grew up in Texas for a while, and I got paddled, so that was a totally different time that we, you know.
There was not corporal punishment in any of my elementary schools.
That's probably good. But but I would argue that God is not about corporal punishment either, right? And, you know, we can get into the consequences of our sin or the consequences of our mistakes and some of those things. But let's talk a little bit about punishment and the biblical concept of punishment.
Sure. Well, I would say that there isn't a biblical... So we've covered that. That punishment isn't really the thing. And so here, let's just take a moment and define punishment. Okay. And here's another moment where it's handy that we're parents. Because punishment is, frankly, what my mom experienced in that school, what you experienced in Texas, and maybe we experienced in our homes from time to time when spanking was still considered appropriate. That's a punishment. It's, in its essence, effectively divorced from the action, right? If you forget to pick up your socks and your shoes and your backpack when you get home, a spanking doesn't have anything to do with shoes and socks and backpack. It's supposed to make you uncomfortable, literally for the point of making you uncomfortable. The end game is actually disruption to you because of inconvenience or disobedience in the other direction. So punishment is not corrective. It's not restorative. I mean, I guess it's corrective in the sense that the fear or the avoidance of that will change your behavior in the future, but it isn't restorative. It's not about resolution. It's about enforcing the level of authority that something or someone has in your life, right?
Right.
So yeah, that's punishment. That concept doesn't really line up with the story of the Bible. Because again, if you're looking at the outcome is specifically to cause discomfort and doesn't have a method of resolution to it and is really just to prove authority, the places that shows up in the Bible is not God carrying out punishment. It's other rulers. So it's, you know, in Egypt, it's the pharaohs to the Jewish people when they were enslaved, when he had the Israelite nation there, punishment was a thing, right? Like, oh, you're asking to go take a feast week? Double the bricks. Oh, don't like it? Triple the bricks. Consequence. People will say, well, I'm going to give my kid consequences, or that employee is going to have some consequences, right? But what they mean is a punishment. You inconvenienced me, you annoyed me, you defied me, you're going to feel my wrath. That's actually punishment. Consequence is when there is a direct relation that the goal is for growth and connection and resolution. So we do have teenagers, and they sometimes defy our authority as their parents and roll their eyes and say sassy comments, right? Our response is not one of, you better work that out because I'm the boss here, right? It's, I know in myself, I am the boss here. I don't need to prove that to them, which is what punishment does. It needs to prove your value as the leader. Consequence is saying, I already know I'm in charge and I'm super secure in that. The problem is the way you're treating me breaks down our relationship. The way that your reaction to my request disrupts my trust of you, disrupts my ability to, you know, invite you into awesome things. And so consequence is actually, it's loving and it's protective, but it's also corrective. And sometimes it's dang uncomfortable, but the point isn't for them to be uncomfortable. The point is for them to wrestle with the tension of like, oh, I've created space in this relationship. I've hurt something in this relationship. I haven't lived up to my end of the bargain that we both agreed on. And so I need to fix that. There's resolution and restitution. And punishment isn't like that. It's not, oh, wow, you didn't live up to your end of the bargain. That sucks because you've now hurt us.
Yeah, the idea is that punishment is not relational, right? In many ways, it is 100% corrective as opposed to...
It's authoritarian. It's I'm in charge and this is my way of proving it.
Yeah. Well, and not even just this is my way of proving it. This is like I'm in charge.
Yep.
This is what's going to happen. Here you go. And I think viewing God from that perspective is missing out on an aspect of his character.
Yeah.
And the idea behind, we always talk about personal relationship with God and we talk about those things in the church and that gets thrown around a lot.
Sure.
But when you start talking about, if you look at all of the ways that God interacts with his people,
yep,
from relational as opposed to, because you can respect people in authority, you
totally
can, and have relationship and via relationship, right? Like it's not that authority, that they lose authority by being relational. I think sometimes people misunderstand that of like, oh, you won't, I'm using again, kids as an example, but oh, you want your kids to be your friend. I don't want my kids to be my friend, but I want Well, yeah, but that, I mean, that's not my goal, right?
Right.
But I do want relationship with them. And that's there's a difference between friendship and relationship.
Yeah.
And I think that that people misunderstand that God is seeking relationship with us. Yes, friendship. Yes, maybe some of the elements of all those other things.
Sure.
But he's seeking relationship with us. And he does that by allowing consequences to play out oftentimes around us.
Yeah.
Because it brings us closer to him and it creates relationship. He's not lightning bolt throwing Thor, you know, from heaven, you know, or Zeus. So.
Yeah, exactly. And it's that, you know, so we talked, I think just in our last podcast about the idea of proximity over brokenness. And this to me is completely tied to that concept. If you view yourself as broken and that God is there to glue you back together, but you will forever be just a shattered shell of what you could be, that every sin ruins you a little more, and in God's good grace, he glues you back together, but you know, you do enough and you're going to be kind of a chinky, mostly duct taped together vessel, then that feels very punitive, right? Like the grace then becomes the grace of you deserved that ugly punishment. But God picks you up out of your own deserved punishment. We're sort of almost like a parent who sort of hyper reacts and spanks the living daylights out of you, or gives you some super serious consequence. And then like the next minute is like sliding you a chocolate bar under your door, right? Like grace begins to feel that way, opposed to if you view it as a proximity issue, with full acknowledgement that there is a point in the proximity continuum where you cross over from getting to know to being in full relationship. And maybe that would be another great discussion for another day.
Right.
But that if you view it ultimately as a proximity issue, that you remove that idea of consequence being punitive punishment, because there isn't any point of punishment if the entire goal is to shorten the distance relationally.
Right. Right.
Actually, punishment does the opposite. And so viewing God as saying, these are sins and you do these and I'm going to get you, actually pushes that divide wider, because then the reaction is all fear-based opposed to trust-based. And trust is really part of that overarching story of the biblical narrative of like, I created you for something. Oh, great, you messed that up. Okay, here, let's try it this way.
But I would challenge that the reason I think a lot of people like the vengeful God, some of it is, honestly, sometimes people are just nasty. Or sure. You know, they like the angry
God. And if they feel like they're on God's side, then...
Right. And then they can, yeah. You know, I always joke with a good friend of mine. I always say, well, you know, and, you know, he talk about things he reads on the internet and or on Facebook and stuff. And he'll be like, this person said this. What do you think about this in terms of like God's interaction with people? And I'm like, well, people just love a good smiting, right? Like they love to see it happen.
Yeah.
But on the other side of it is I would challenge people that really love the idea of a God that's vengeful, that maybe they are too afraid of what a relational God means to them.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot more intimacy when your consequences of your actions are connected to the problem that you created and they're not divorced of it. We love it when it's like, this bad thing happened between this other person and I. Well, it's because, you know, it's because God did this to them or God's doing this to me or whatever, instead of going, oh man, wow, did I do something that created this situation?
And I think that's a great point, because the punitive really is a scorecard, right? How many times did I lie today? How many times was I selfish, or did I lust, or, you know, whatever,
right.
Whatever the score. And then you sort of atone for those. It almost becomes a bit like my name is Earl, right? Like it almost becomes a karma-esque tally where there's things you can do because grace, there's, you know, things you can do to sort of balance that tally sheet. And God is nice enough that if you say the right prayer, that he'll just wipe that tally sheet clean. That feels tangible. That feels controllable. And it actually feels safe.
Right.
Right. At least that's what I hear you saying, where the relational side of it is like, well, you did things that hurt this relationship, and it's not a tally sheet.
It's a lot more intimate and a lot more personal.
It's about being honest with yourself about what motivated you to do those things. It's about owning the lies that you believe. It's about accepting that there are aspects of yourself that you're not willing to let go of yet, that those actions, it's not the action by itself that was an issue. It's if you're lying, why are you lying? What are you afraid of? Where's your identity broken down? Where is your value system broken down? And then relationship demands that's what you bring to God.
Right.
And the Psalms is a perfect example of what it looks like to do that.
Yeah.
It's not just all right, Lord, here are the five things I'm pretty sure that I sinned on today. So please just wipe them out. Okay. Can you just wipe those clean? It's about coming and saying, okay, Lord, I remember these five things. Help me see where my attitude about you or my attitude about who you say I am, where is that wrong? Well, like why do these actions exist?
Yeah, maybe the sin is a reflection of your heart versus the sin scarring your heart. You know what I mean? And
right.
I think that looking at it in that way, again, it's a deeper understanding of, you know, the church has wrestled with the idea of faith versus works for since its inception, right? Like since the beginning of the church, it's part of what is talked about in Romans. I mean, this is a discussion that the church actually has had, disciples had.
Yeah.
And it's because works are really easy to measure.
Yeah.
But our heart isn't.
Yep.
And so an angry God that can knock people off and punish us punitively for our sin and our works makes us feel a lot better because we're like, well, I'm through that. I got my punishment. I'm done. Yep. So.
Yeah. And there's this, the sticky aspect that what you believe, like what you genuinely believe is eventually going to show up out in public. Right. So if you, and that's sort of that works tension, right? And the punitive versus consequence tension that, man, if I really believe that we are stewards of this earth, and that is something I do believe and I do say to our kids, that that means that when I'm shopping for groceries, I need to be thoughtful in how I buy things. Because if I believe I'm a good steward, that means that I have a responsibility to the world God created and the systems and the orders of the way he told us to cultivate and care for the world.
Right.
And so if I can't say that is a belief and then not at least attempt to do that in some tangible way out in the way we live our lives, right? And so that is the trick of works, right? You can see, they say, you know, hurting people hurt people. Hurting people hurt people. And the reason that axiom sort of holds true is you see it in their actions. When someone is hurting, they're defensive, they're paranoid, they're quick to judge, they're quick to lash out. And those things create hurt. And so we've had this way of sort of wrapping up like, well, that's not okay. Why do they do that? Well, that's an internal thing that's showing up externally.
But historically, so we have wrapped people on the hands for the actions that they did that were a result of the heart of where they were.
Right. But without actually examining the heart, because that's a really hard thing. Again, there's the whole historical context of the church as a political power, the church as a socioeconomic power. And so that mucks things up. Over and above the difficulty of humans being with other humans in community. But you have to accept that there is this level of the way that we behave tells the people that we're in relationship with something about what we genuinely believe about ourselves, about them, about the world, about God. And so our actions do have to have a reaction, but it's really hard as a leader or a mentor to speak to anything that isn't just the action. It takes a whole lot of time and trust building to have relationship enough to be able to say, huh, that action tells me that maybe you, you know, fill in the blank.
Well, and I think that specific theme will be a theme of future discussions as we talk about specific sins or sin patterns that the church has latched onto. And not the church being that way, but like when we talk about specific sins, we talk we like to villainize certain things when really what we're talking about is a much deeper rooted misunderstanding of relationship. So
totally. So I wanted to end, this will be in the blog associated with this one, but I wanted to end with just a very short peek at Matthew chapter 11, because I think if you don't want to bother to survey the Bible or read books about this, Matthew, the second half of this chapter pretty well covers this concept. So Jesus is talking and teaching, as he did, and he condemns the series of cities basically for their hard hearts, and they wanted a sign, and they wanted this. And I mean, his language is strong. He's not being like, oh, come on, guys, I just need you to
turn your hearts around.
Come on, like, kumbaya, peoples. He's like, hey, you are failing. This is not okay. I mean, there is condemnation language. It's very strong because they're looking for an action and they refuse to engage in relationship. And I think if you keep that relational proximity thing in the back of your mind when you read those verses, it's just glaring. And then immediately after that, and quick pause to acknowledge, that the authors of these gospels, they laid out these snippets in, it's not chronological, it's intentional.
Yeah, right? With a purpose.
Yeah. It's purposeful. They are trying to get us to follow the narrative. And so while true, not chronological, always. And so we want to hold that there's a relationship between those two things. And so this condemnation language of these cities. And then he goes right into just slamming into what feels like almost an 180-degree reversal of, come to me, all who are weary and heavy laden, or all come to me, you who are tired and burdened. Take my yoke on you. It is easy and light. Like, that's just the opposite of, hey, guys, get your poo together, which was immediately before that. And I think that dichotomy is just this like flashing light of the difference between punitive and corrective. Because even in the condemnations of the cities, he's not saying, you know, shame on you, I'm going to strike you with boils for this. He's saying, come on, here I am. I've come to finally bridge the gap. You have been struggling with this since Abraham started this whole gig. I'm here to bridge the gap. And all you're asking for is a magic show. Come on, right?
Yeah.
And then turns around and says to the individual, come to me if you're weary and you're heavy laden. My burden is light. Like, I come here. And that idea of the yoke, right? It's that it lays across a set of oxen. It's shared caring. It's a lightening of the burden of not like, man, life is hard. I'm here to do this with you, right? It's this really beautiful picture of relational togetherness. And I don't think that that's an accident.
Yeah.
That there is this just intense press against people completely unwilling to see any relationship and just want like the slot machine magic show, and then going directly into, but those who want relationship, come on. I've got you.
It's good.
Yeah.
So if you are struggling with seeing God, or again, comfortable with seeing God as an angry God, the lightning bolt God, maybe start thinking about why you believe that way. What comfort do you find in a